Welcome to Cerro Talk Tech Chat number 53 for March 4th, 2010. Tonight's topic is setting up a new computer. And we're going to talk about some things that new users should keep in mind, or maybe you are assisting someone in building a new computer. Two things I quickly want to mention. First off, I want to extend my condolences to the family and good friends, myself one included, of George Buys, who passed away after a long bout with emphysema. George was an inspiration to the blind and visually impaired community. He accomplished quite a lot. TalkingCommunities.com, audio tips, worked with Kathy Ann to get her presentations going, did a lot for Accessible World and setting up the Pat Price training room, and of course worked with Norm Coombs and all the easy seminars and webinars and so forth. George definitely made a difference, improved the quality of life by promoting the concept that if we share the knowledge we have with those who do not have that knowledge, we will all be stronger and better as a result. George was a good friend of mine, and sir, you will truly be missed. I will do my best to live on at least part of your legacy to educate and inform the public. Well, the other day I got a new little goodie in the mail, as many folks did. I got the new iBill Talking Money Identifier. So before we start tonight, I want to talk about this for just a second. A little demo of it here. It kind of reminds me of a pager. It's about 3 inches long, 2 inches wide, inch thick. There's a little cover you kind of open up. It doesn't remove, but you flip it open, and there's one AAA battery that the device uses. And there's a kind of a cutout groove where you insert one end of the bill. I got three bills here in front of me. Insert what someone would call the short end of the bill, meaning any one of the four corners should be able to read and tell you what the bill is.
One.
Okay, so there you heard it is a one. And I will put one other one in here. So it's a little tricky. You do have to watch because the corner of the bill, which is what it reads, could get bent as you insert it.
20.
There you go. There's a 20 and a 1. So essentially what you have, other than that, you have a button on each end of the device. Press either button to get the information. And if you hold the buttons in, and what you can do is you have either voice spoken as you heard, or you can hold in these keys and toggle through modes of having tones or vibrations. So I hit one in both keys, vibrate, tone, and then low, medium, and high volume levels for speech. So that's really cool if you somewhere where you don't want people to know what money you're working with. You know, so you've got the benefit of having privacy. Now, of course, you have to learn what the tones are and the vibrations are. Essentially, one low tone for a one, two low tones for a two, and three low pitch tones for a five, one higher frequency tone for 10, two for 20, and three for 50, and then I think a really long tone for 100. I don't have any 100s here to test that out. Again, you can read the documentation if you decide to get the device. A, it is much smaller than any money identifier to date. It is also the least expensive of any money identifier to date. $99 with shipping came out to like $110, and you can get it at orbitresearch.com. Now, they do not have an online portal. You have to kind of fill out a little form, and then they call you and take the credit card information over the phone. It appears to be a really cool device. Very excited about it. It has worked on every bill that I've put into it thus far. I haven't really just crumpled and just mutilated the build to see what it would do. But I think if all corners were messed up, you might have difficulty. But they claim 99% accuracy. From what I can tell, at least it's not going to give you the wrong information. It's either going to read what it is or come back with an error message. Now, of course, with all these devices, our currency changes every so often. So when that happens, I'll be curious to see if we will need to get some update to the device and how that will work. And I assume the devices will have to be sent back. So we'll see, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But if you need a talking currency identifier, this is a great tool. It's small enough, you can fit it in your pocket or purse. You know, use tones or vibrations so you have the benefit of privacy if you're somewhere where you don't need it announced that you've got a 20 on you. The main topic for tonight, and that is setting up a new computer. So we're going to approach this with two particular types of people in mind. A, someone who doesn't have a computer yet, and B, someone who assists people in building new computers. I'm going to outline some things that I think you should keep in mind when getting a computer before you get this new computer. Things I would ponder before you get started. One, to me, this is a big question. When you tell me you want a computer, what should I get? I say, what do you want to do with the computer? I mean, you want to email, browse the web. Do you want to talk to other people via Skype or some technology? Maybe even have video. So you're going to use something like Skype and maybe need a webcam. What do you want to do in terms of music? Do you want to just listen to radio stations? Do you want to download and purchase music? Do you want to rip music from CDs that you already own or maybe convert albums over to compact discs? Do you want to watch TV shows or maybe even install a TV tuner card so you can control and record TV through your computer? Do you want to download and watch movies, and therefore you have to think about, is your processor good enough to do that? Do you want to be involved in social networking or reading books online, or what about OCR software? Do you want to be able to scan and read pieces of paper like mail, letters you get, utility bills, other pieces of paper that you want to convert to spoken text or large screen displays so that you can respond to them? Question number two, and this is very important, how much do you have to spend or can you spend? And again, remember that doesn't just stop with the computer. You've got the computer, and if you're buying it new, it probably comes with a copy of Microsoft Windows. These days, Microsoft Windows 7, inheriting an older computer. Maybe you got Windows XP on it. It may even be an older machine with Vista, which we would recommend then upgrading to Windows 7 for accessibility and reliability. But so how much do you have to spend, and then think of the other things that go along with that? You're going to need some kind of software to read the screen or enlarge the screen. If you're partially sighted, want to add some software to do many of the things that we talked about previously here. So these are all things that you're going to have to keep in mind. Question three is, do you want portability? What kind of computer do you want? Do you want speed, and is it going to be fixed and stay at the same place all the time? Then you get like a tower or mini tower that costs less and gives you more speed and performance. Or do you want portability? Do you want a laptop, you know, with a 15 or 17 inch screen because you need that to see what's on the screen? Or do you want something really small and lightweight, like 2.5 pounds, known as a netbook with only a 10 inch screen, which is great for many people, but not if you're partially sighted because it's real difficult to enlarge the screen. So those are all some things to keep in mind. And then going beyond the computer itself, how much do you have or plan to spend on software? Because you're going to want to add things to it. And maybe there's programs $25, $30, $40, you know, or maybe you need Microsoft Office. So that gets much more expensive. So those are all things you're going to have to keep in mind when setting out a price point that you have to work with. Question number five, will you need to pay someone for training before you can use this computer? A real basic one that sometimes I don't think to ask, and it comes up. Do you know how to type? I mean, do you know how to type on a keyboard? Did you have typing in school or learn the computer keyboard? Now, you can learn the nuances of a computer keyboard, but if you never learned to type, that's something you're going to have to get down pat first, either by going to some local training facility or talking typing tutor out there. I don't recall off the top of my head who makes that. We can find out if anyone's interested in that. Or getting some one-on-one training to make sure that you're typing correctly. So local training is a really good option for that if you need it. Of course, if you decide to go with System Access from Serotech, as same with the JAWS, you have a hotkey you can turn on, in our case, insert H, and then each key will speak what it does, its purpose. Another thing is the existing computer. It's like, how old of a computer can you work with in terms of amount of RAM, size of a hard drive? Does it at least have Microsoft Windows XP? In other words, if you're going to inherit someone else's computer, that might be good, save you some money, but you need to make sure it has enough speed and performance to do what you want. How quickly do you learn? And are you patient with learning? Because computing can be very frustrating if you cannot make it work for you. Another thing to think about is the difference of whether you're totally blind or partially sighted and have low vision. If you have some vision, then you need some kind of screen enlargement, or maybe you need a larger computer monitor, whereas if you're totally blind, then your focus is going to be on getting a good screen reader, good set of speakers, or a good set of headphones, or some way that you can hear it and understand it very clearly. Do you have a dedicated space in your home or apartment where the computer can be stored or be set up? You know, want to make sure it's not near a lot of other supplies that could fall into it and damage it and so forth. So again, it's good to know if you have any kind of local training centers available to you, or friends or family or mentors that can work with you if you get stuck on something. Because sometimes you're cruising along, all of a sudden you lose your speech, and you just get to that point where you have to maybe get some sighted assistance if that's an option. We have something called remote access. I know that Bill uses, and it's been very handy when your computer's not talking. Someone else can remote into it and kind of check out, or even you can remote into it yourself. Maybe the sound's muted and all you got to do is get your sound turned back on, or kind of, I mean, there's some error message on the screen and you can get that closed out and then get it fixed. So it's important to know if you have the means or willing to pay someone to help do some remote training or set up the machine and resolve if you have some problems with it. Can you learn from reading with synthetic speech? Great as it is, some people get kind of hypnotized by it, actually put to sleep. So you want to try demos of different software. Which screen reader is best for you? That's hard to say because it depends on how you're going to use your computer. You've got System Access that you can demo by going to freescreenreader.com. You can use it As long as you have internet connection, you can go ahead and install it, get a free 7-day demo. And if you don't have the money to buy it outright, you can use it on a monthly basis for as low as $9.95 per month. You know, then you can get demos of WindowEyes at gwmicro.com, or there's also a free solution that some folks use for social networking called Klango, and that's available. It's klango.net. System Access has some screen enlargement built in if you need that, at least up to 6X, and that will help if you have mild visual impairment. Now, if you are extremely visually impaired or almost blind, then you're going to need something more robust, a dedicated enlargement program, something like Zoom Text that you can get at AISquared.com. You know, again, you have to decide this question. Do you need a brand new computer, or are you content, and can you use a refurbished computer? Or maybe your computer is fine, it's just running very slow and sluggish, and it's just a simple issue of reinstalling Microsoft Windows. Something you'll have to decide based on cost and maybe someone a little more knowledgeable, because a new user is not going to know that other than first indicating what you want to do. Question is, how old is the computer? And, you know, how much RAM memory does it have? You certainly want a minimum of 1 gigabyte these days. More is always nice. I myself wouldn't go with anything more than 4 years old. You might be able to go 5 or 6. You certainly don't want anything that has anything older than Windows XP if they tell you it has Windows 2000 or 98 or Millennium. Sorry, you just need to leave it behind. It's just not going to work for you. Now, the other thing you're going to have to do is set up your software that you need. That's going to depend on you as a user. What do you want to do with your computer? Some of the best voices are different voices. So if you're going to use speech with your computer, you're going to have to find what voice works best for you. Many people like one called Eloquence, but others think it sounds very synthetic and robotic. Now, the way that I get around that is to actually lower the pitch of it, and it makes it sound a little more human, and I can speed it up, and it seems to work for me, and seems to be one of the most popular. Eloquence is included with a lot of different screen readers, JAWS and WindowEyes and System Access, so some folks like something called DeckTalk, Access 32. Many of you have probably heard DeckTalk, nothing else, even on many of the old telephone systems. Technology called NeoSpeech, and there's voices out there like Kate and Paul that you may have heard. Those of you who own a BookSense player, there's one that we have at Serotech, in addition to that, called Julie. There's what are called RealSpeak voices. Those are some add-ons, and they use something called Sappy 5. You got Tom and Samantha that many of you know if you've heard the Victor Reader stream, although they sound a little bit better on the computer, but they are still the same voice. UK Daniel, there's also some voices from Australia. Different voices out there, and you have to just listen to them. The websites have samples, or play around with that with the screen reader that you choose and see which one's going to work best for you. If you're going to read your mail, books and letters and recipes and handouts that you get, you're going to have to look at OCR, a solution that stands for optical character recognition that converts the text into speech. Now, some options include, one of the most economical is a part of System Access that's called Document Scan. There's some more expensive options that have a lot of features if you need all that advanced functionality. There's one called OpenBook that's sold by Freedom Scientific. There's Kurzweil K1000 V12. These are very expensive options. So if you got someone buying it for you, that's great. If you can justify $1,000 for these higher priced technologies, then you can do that. But there's also some off-the-shelf solutions, such as OmniPage. I think it's up to version 17. There's also something called Abbey Fine Reader. Do you want or need Braille? Will you be importing any kind of Braille display? Then you'll have to make sure that whatever screen reader you choose supports your Braille display. Then there's some options. Where do you go for funding if you can't do it on your own? There are some local Lions clubs that used to buy Braillers for folks that have been known to do computers, although I have not seen any kind of national list of different organizations and their addresses and so forth. So, but some folks have rehab agencies to fall back on, or pay for it out of their own pocket, or sometimes benefit of family or friends that assist them as well. And then once you do get online, there's a lot of options that people use for interacting with folks, talking to others. There's a technology that we're using tonight to feed into the phone conference called Skype. You have free conversations with fellow computer users. There's also a service or voice chat available on Samnet, which is a part of the Serotech network, and that's useful. A lot of people go in there and just talk to other users and ask questions, or just sometimes sit back and listen and learn. So that's a lot of the way that you're going to pick up your computer knowledge, is a hands-on, just not being afraid to try things. If you're not sure what something does, leave it alone, but just look through the options. If you're not sure what it does, just leave it. If you want to make some changes, you know, click OK or apply and go on your way. Once you get on online. There's a lot of great resources out there. There's AccessibleWorld.com. There's BlindCoolTech.com. There's Cerotalk.com. ACB Radio. So there's just a lot of different options out there that you can utilize to try to make it work. If you're going to rebuild a computer from scratch or you get a new computer, what do you do? You know, if you're reinstalling Windows, what do you need to have in place to make sure all of that's going to work for you? One, you need to back up. If you're rebuilding an existing computer, you need to make sure that you or you get someone you know to back up all of the important files. Music, you know, if you have important documents, maybe you have some family photos and other things, you need to get all that stuff backed up. So backing up my documents and my pictures, or maybe you put them in other places, or there's software like called Backup for All, or what's called imaging that makes a whole snapshot of your hard drive. And that way you have a backup of it. So when you reinstall Windows, you can go and get whatever files you need. Now, keep in mind, software, you can't just go copy it back on. You have to install it. So you're also going to want to keep all of the installers, meaning every little executable program that you wish to use for it. Also keeping some kind of text file with all of your product keys. Maybe keeping all of your important emails anytime that you bought or purchased a product so that you have that licensing information. What I do, a couple ways you might approach that is keep something, a file like serials.txt or keys.txt or something that has all of the product activation codes for your computer, all the software that you use. So keep it on a directory called software, something that works for you, whatever you want to call it, as long as you know what it is and know where it is. You need to make sure that you have your Windows product activation key, because once you reinstall Windows, you're going to have to enter that key again. Now, oftentimes, there's a little sticker on the side of the computer that contains that information. But if not, you know, then you need to either get it from the computer before you reinstall. There's a couple things a lot of people like to do if you can. Now, sometimes the computer's so corrupted that you can't, but if it's just slow and you're going to rebuild it and have it run cleaner and faster, you back up your favorites. These are all the cool web pages that you've been to and get all your documents and all the stuff that we talked about. But make sure that you have an original Windows CD or DVD. There's nothing like trying to hose a computer down and then realize I don't even have the disk to install Windows, or I don't have it. Now I got to go out and buy a copy of Windows. So some computers, like some of the Dells and the HPs, you may not actually have a disk. They may actually have an image on the computer that restores it back to when it was new. And so then you're probably going to need some help to go in there and say, restore this image and take it back to day one after you've backed up everything that you want to. Got a Vista computer and you're wanting to rebuild it. Your Vista's corrupted. Probably better to spend the money and go with Microsoft Windows 7. If you have a computer that has XP, then it's probably better to stay with XP. Unless it's really new, going from XP to Windows 7 could be a challenge for a computer, say, older than 2, maybe 3 years. But anything really old, if it's running XP, leave it at XP. Leave well enough alone. If possible, it always have some sighted assistance. It's unfortunate. Now, a lot of folks use Macintosh computers because they have found ways that they really don't need sighted help. They can install it and build it and do everything from scratch. If you're in Windows, if you have no speech at all, or you just rebuilt the computer, one of the first things you're going to have to do is something comes up called an out-of-box experience. So you're going to have to run something called Narrator, and it's done by holding down the Windows key and pressing the letter U followed by Alt plus N. You know, that's what you're going to do in Vista or Windows 7. Of course, then you hit Alt X to exit that. If you're an XP, you just hit Start key, the letter R, and type the word Narrator, and then when you're done with speech, you hit Alt X to exit. And again, if this sounds foreign to you, then again, you're going to need some help in getting things started. You get your new computer, you pull it out of the box, you got it all plugged in, the keyboard and the mouse and everything else. So you start this Narrator, and you got to get past this what's called out-of-box experience. It asks you some personal questions about your computer and how you're going to use it. And if you're fairly proficient, you can do it with Narrator. It's kind of an annoying speech, Microsoft Sam. So it's not a great speech. You can get it done and get past that. And once you get that done, you got to make sure you got your computer preferably connected directly to a router if you have it, or a cable modem or a DSL modem, so that you have internet access. Good to either have a copy of the NVDA screen reader available at nvda-project.org, or if you own system access, you can get it on what's called a U3. It's a special type of USB little stick hard drive that you can plug it in and get speech going. Or if you have internet, you can go to www.freescreenreader.com, or just go to SA2Go, SATOGO.com, whichever is easier for you to remember. They both kind of do the same thing. So once you get all that going, then you can follow the prompts. If you've gone to freescreenreader.com, get it running, and then you can down arrow 11 times, I believe it is, and it says install on this machine, so you can try it all out for 7 days. You've got speech. You've got access to SAMNet, System Access Mobile Network, come in and talk to other users. Once it's set up, you can remember the hotkey. It's on your desktop, but if you don't have speech, you just hit Control Alt and S to start system access. Or if you want to get on the SAMNet, our network of different content with 2,200 movies and radio stations and TV shows and what's called the Socializer, which is kind of an easy interface to get up to speed with using Twitter and Facebook and so forth, you can do that with Control Alt N. Now, once you're connected to SAMNet, you can click on SA Mobile Network Home, choose chat, and then go into either the cafe or the pub room. Especially in the evenings, there's a lot of people there. You can ask some of the questions that new users have. If you find yourself scratching your head, there are some books available to NLS, so you can contact your local library where you get your NLS books, or if you're a member of RFB&D, or maybe you're someone you know with Bookshare, there's all some great choices there. Before you get started, or as you're getting started, you want to make a CD or DVD, or maybe have a USB drive with all of the software and maybe the drivers and maybe a screen reader and some antivirus and spyware software, so that once you get this new computer, you can go ahead, or if someone's helping you, they can go ahead and get all this stuff set up for you. And of course, don't forget all your important passwords and maybe even saved email. I know Bill's done that, backing up to Outlook Express and taking over to a new computer. Sometimes these new computers come with a lot of unnecessary software that you don't want, slowing it down. They get paid a little money to install it on there, like Norton 360 or McAfee. That's different antivirus software. So there's a program called PC Decrapifier. Yes, that's what it's called. And you can get that at PCDecrapifier.com and use that to remove any unwanted material. And a lot of people buy now these external USB drives. That way you can take it from one computer to another and back up all of your important files. Good investment. I mean, you can get a terabyte drives now as low as $79. So you want to make this disk or USB drive or whatever to something that has all of the software that you might want to use. What are your options? All I can do is give you some options here. You definitely want something for your viruses, antivirus software. There's a free one called MSE or Microsoft Security Essentials that you can get at Microsoft.com. There's something called Antivir at Avira.com, A-V-I-R-A.com, or you can pay for one that a lot of us are using at SunbeltSoftware.com, and it's called Viper, spelled V-I-P-R-E. It's a very good virus and software option, and they've even come up with a new one with a firewall. And what a firewall does is it protects your computer from unauthorized inbound or outbound activities, especially if you have a cable modem or a DSL modem and you're connecting it directly to your computer without using any kind of router that has its own firewall. That is something worth considering. There's some free software or low-cost software that you can use for getting rid of spyware. And spyware are things that report things that you're doing, and that can happen from opening the wrong email, going to the wrong website. So you've got one called Super Anti-Spyware at superantispyware.com. You got one with a weird name called Malwarebytes Anti-Malware, and that is at malwarebytes.com. Then it's a question of the screen reader. So it's either having NVDA available for you there at nvda-project.org. Just in case you don't have access to the internet or you haven't purchased your system access yet, that tool has proven useful. Of course, Microsoft has Narrator built in. Not the most useful, but I guess better than nothing. It can save you in the worst case situation. If you're going to be writing a lot of texts and editors and maybe writing your manual, the story of your life or the book or something, you're going to want some kind of text editor. And there's some free options out there. There's one called Ed Sharp. It's written by Jamal Mazrui. It's a very powerful program, and you can get that. It's over at empowermentzone.com/edsetup.exe. There's another free one called JART. And again, these are free or paid. JART, you can pay a little bit and get some other features. J-A-R-T-E. It's good if you don't have the money but want to learn kind of how to work with Microsoft Word documents, because maybe you want to go out and get a job but you don't have the money to buy Office. You can use JART and kind of understand how Microsoft Word works. You may want some of the web browsers to get yourself updated. You don't need this in Windows 7, but if you're using XP, you're going to want to turn around right away and update the built-in Internet Explorer browser to version 8.0, or a lot of blind folks now using something called Firefox. And it's a browser that's a little more secure, and also it gives access to a service called WebVism that people use to what are called CAPTCHA. Sometimes you go to a website, and it'll come back and ask you to enter a code that's on the screen. Well, sometimes there's a link you can listen to the audio and type in the characters, or sometimes not. So WebVism gives you a way to send that to a remote computer and send it back to you. And this is to protect websites from people just creating bogus accounts for spamming and all kinds of mean and nasty things. So then it's a question, well, how are you going to do Outlook? If you're in Windows XP, you got things like Outlook Express. If you're in Windows 7, you might want an email program like Thunderbird, or if you have a subscription to Samnet, it starts at $9.95 a month. We have what's called third-party email. That means you can use it and log in from any computer anywhere and add all your accounts through that. If you're going to do a lot of music, there's some free players. There's built-in Microsoft as what's called Windows Media Player 11. There's one a lot of blind folks use called Winamp. Some folks use Klango, again, klango.net for that purpose. And, of course, there is Samnet. They have a built-in media player that plays all the different media types and a lot of radio stations, and that's used to listen to any of the described movies that they have on the network. Now, if you want to do recording, that's going to be a little expenditure. The only one that's free, really, is an app called Audacity, A-U-D-A-C-I-T-Y. But you're going to need to get an older version, I think 1.26. The newest one has gone backwards in terms of accessibility. One that's really popular, maybe overkill for a lot of people, called SoundForge, but they have a light version for about $49 and a more expensive one for a couple hundred. It just depends what kind of editing you're going to be doing. There's one that's made by the APH, American Printing House for the Blind, called Studio Recorder. There's one that some blind folks use. It's not too expensive, called Goldwave. And some computers, it sounds good. Some computers, the audio sounds really distorted, so I don't always recommend it. But, you know, you got to use what's going to work for you. As far as music, there are some free things out there. There's iTunes. That's probably not for the beginning computer user, but it is an option, especially if you have an iPod or iPhone or some device that you need to sync the music from your computer over to that. You almost have to have iTunes for that. And then, of course, there's a lot of websites that you can go to. So they're not software per se. They are actually places you go to and can buy and listen to music. You got Amazon.com. You got Lala.com, L-A-L-A.com. You got one that my son just told me about, myplaylist.com. There's one called last.fm, slacker.com, one called Pandora, P-A-N-D-O-R-A.com. I don't think I'd recommend that for new users. So I think at this point we will take some questions and just see what concerns you have. And we'll start with the folks in the telephone free conference setup.
Yeah, I have one.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
So this is Randy Hall. I'm in Newcastle, Indiana.
Yes, sir.
I've heard of a recording program called Total Recorder. What do you know about that? How does it work for recording a record set over a CD?
Well, Total Recorder, it's a pretty good program. I think it's about $50. I think there's different versions. The problem that some people have, Randy, is it tries to take over your sound card, and then some people have issues with speech. It's good if you get it set up right, and it's a Canadian company, and it does a lot of cool stuff. You can record radio and actually cue and review through it, like you hear something, and even while you're recording, you can kind of rewind and listen to it again. I just have a hard time recommending it for new users because it has its own what are called sound drivers, and sometimes it's been known to mess up the screen reader. So it's a good option. I'm glad you mentioned it. And if you have someone to go through and get it set up for you, or unless you're more of an intermediate user and can do it yourself, it can be a good program, but it is definitely economical. And if you write sound card or two sound cards, it works great. It's just you got to be careful that it doesn't turn around and kill your screen reader for you.
I'm Carol Seifert in Vincennes, Indiana, and I don't have a question, but I do have a comment on Total Recorder.
Okay,
I'm using it, and the price on it for the professional edition is $35.99. And it is for the money. It's a good program, and I've never really had any problem with my screen reader with it.
I think the newer versions are, it's a little bit better. They've got it resolved.
They've really made some good changes in the new version.
So there you go. Randy, you may not have any issue at all. Just make sure that you're comfortable with how to set volume on your computer. Again, it depends on which, whether you have Windows XP or Windows 7. If you use Windows XP, there's something, a little program you run called SNDVOL32. And if you're going to do a lot of audio recording and stuff, that's essential to kind of learn that program. It basically just has a tab for playback and a tab for recording, meaning which things do you want to monitor, be able to listen to, and which things do you want to record from. Once you learn that, you can probably resolve any issue that you're having. But yeah, Total Recorder has come a long way. I did have a little issue with 8.0 on one of my computers, the other one not. It may depend on the sound card you have, but good for the price. I'm reluctant to recommend it to someone brand new just in case it throws you for a loop. But for most people, it should be fine and a great product indeed. Anyone else?
For my personal record collection, I need equipment to collect into the computer to do that with.
Do you have like a preamp or something for your turntable, the stereo system? Before you can record albums, you have to have some way to connect your turntable to the computer. So that's either buying a USB turntable, or if you've already got a stereo system, taking an output from that stereo system from your amp or preamp or receiver and plugging that into the line input on your computer. So that's kind of the short answer. It depends specifically on what you have as far as the equipment, existing hi-fi equipment. But those are kind of the two ways. And then you use Total Recorder or, you know, some program. It doesn't really matter because you're just recording it and then you're saving it and maybe manipulating. Different software has, some of them claim to have different tick and pop removal features in there that can clean up the albums for you. Your mileage varies with that. It can certainly be done, definitely.
I have a question.
Okay, please proceed.
Okay, I'm Lucille Fletcher from LaPorte, Indiana. And how much time should a new user spend to start out with and not get frustrated?
Well, that varies. That depends on the person. I think I would say if you start feeling frustrated, walk away from it. You know, I would say an hour or two a day, but it depends on the person. I mean, you might sit down and within 10 or 15 minutes, I think a lot of it has to do with you're kind of cruising along and everything's good. And then all of a sudden you get stumped on something and it throws you. And so my recommendation is once you feel that frustration coming on and you're just not sure what to do, walk away from it, regroup. But that's kind of a personal thing. I mean, it just depends on you and your level of patience. And like we talked about the learning curve, how quickly you can learn, or if you have a support network of someone that you can call on the phone and ask how to do something. I would really encourage new computer users to either get some kind of tutorials or books from the NLS. I know they've got Windows XP for Dummies, which doesn't mean you're dumb if you use it. It means they just kind of break down some common things like how to do email and how to browse the web. And it's a few years old, about 7 years old, but if you're going to use Windows XP, I think it's a good book. It doesn't cost you anything and just kind of follow through the steps. And I think that will be really helpful if you're not coming into this with much knowledge, because you know, a new user, like I said, is A, going to have to know how to type, A, going to have a friend or two that they can call, and some kind of training materials one way or another. You know, if you need to pay someone, that's great, or if you can get some of these great books from the National Library Service. But, you know, if you get really frustrated, walk away from it for a few minutes and regroup. People get so upset and they want to throw the thing out the window or start banging on it or cussing at it, and that's not healthy. So just, you know, follow your first instincts and do what feels comfortable for you.
I think it takes time. And you've really got to work at it, just slowly take it a little bit each day. Work on a little bit, get one thing learned, go to the next step, and use that support network.
Let's see if we have any questions from the tech chat itself. Is there anyone in the Serotalk tech chat with questions?
Not on the phone,
now,
however.
Guys.
Okay, we got Kenneth here, who's on the SAMnet.
Okay, I have Microsoft Office Home and Student on the home computer, and I want to put it on my netbook, but I don't have a external, you know, I have no optical drive and I don't have a USB external optical drive. Is there any other way that, like using a flash drive, like the U3 smart drive, or maybe remoting into the home computer? Is there any other way other than getting a external optical drive that I could get that program into my netbook?
If you got enough space, Ken's question is, he wants to install Office on a netbook, and this comes up very common. How do you install programs on a netbook that doesn't have a CD drive? So you got a couple of options. You can either A, buy a USB CD drive for $59.69 that come in handy, or you extract Office. You can copy it to a drive, plan on maybe at least a 4-gig drive, and just copy it to that drive, and then just run the setup file from there, and you should be able to accomplish what you want as long as you got your product key. So that should work for you. Any of you have connections in the university environment, you can oftentimes get it through your college bookstore at a great, great discount. Or if you have a nonprofit organization, and I can't think of the website, if you can prove that you're a 501c3, you can get Office at a dramatically reduced price as well. So there's some economical opportunities out there for those who need that technology.
I'm trying to figure out how to, I have a netbook, and I was able to figure out how to take from my external CD drive and, you know, load a CD into my computer, and I would like to burn a copy of it onto a blank CD. I'm having some difficulty trying to get that done.
Is it an audio CD or a data CD?
It's an audio CD.
Yeah, you can do Windows Media Player. You can, SAMnet has a CD burning technology for music CDs, which also has built-in mixing capability so that your songs actually mix. So it sounds like one kind of fades into the other, and it kind of sounds like a cool radio station, and all the volume levels are the same. Windows Media Player 11, SAMnet, CDEX, or Easy CDDA Extractor. It's hard. Poikosoft.com, PoikoSoft.com. All solutions for you to burn or copy one CD to another there.
This is Kenny.
Kenny, go ahead, sir.
You'd mentioned earlier about organizations and software. There's a website called TechSoup.
That's what I was thinking of. TechSoup.org for the 501c3. You can get discounted copies of Microsoft Windows or Office. You are correct. TechSoup.org. If you are or work for a 501c3, you do have to fill out a little form and verify that you are truly a nonprofit. But that is correct. Thank you, Ken, for that.
The speechware that you have or that Bill put into this computer.
Okay, system access, okay.
System access, that it works as well for sighted people as the blind. What did you mean by that?
Many at screen readers install software that alters the way the screen displays. If you use WindowEyes or JAWS, then sometimes a sighted person can't, like, click in forms and stuff because it alters the layout of the screen. So if you use System Access or even NVDA, it doesn't alter the screen. So it makes it easier for a sighted person to work on your computer and even still leave the screen reader going without the video chaining that some of these screen readers install messing with it. So it's a very powerful reason to have System Access, because if anyone else is using your computer with a lot of screen readers, it's not going to work right, and they are going to get frustrated, and then they're going to want to turn off the screen reader, and then you may not know what they're doing to your computer. So We at Serotech wanted to really make sure that when you use System Access, you're using it just like a sighted person does. What you hear is what you see, and what you see is what you hear. And that's great for training and just, making sure that we're all on the same page. So that's, I think, what Bill meant by that.
I had a question about networking. I'm thinking of setting up a wireless printer. What all would I need if I was to do wireless printing?
I've never done wireless printing. I've just got the first printer about a week ago that actually has the capability, so it just depends. I think that varies. Some can connect to your router. I got one from Brother that you actually log into it, physically connect it via a Ethernet cable to your router, and then your devices talk to it through the router.
Would I need to get a wireless router to go with the printer, or because the printer set up as wireless, if I needed to just use the router connect to the computer, or if the router was going to be needed?
Well, I think some printers do have direct wireless connectivity, but I suspect you're going to pay more for that. Most of them, from my knowledge, and again, I have limited knowledge, it's not my area of expertise, but most of them connect to the router, so that the theory is that way any of your devices go through the router, and it's set up for multiple machines. This new Brother that I got is 5370, which I highly recommend. It's a great printer, very blind friendly as far as just plugging in the cartridge and the drum, and all the software is pretty straightforward. And I think for economics, if you're trying to save money, it's probably easier to interface it with the router and then have all your devices talk to the printer as a device through the router.
One thing I would recommend that is, if at all possible, and you're getting a new computer for the first time, or even a refurbished computer, that at all possible, that you need to get a DSL or cable provider, because dial-up just doesn't do it anymore. You're not going to have a good internet experience with a dial-up connection anymore.
Very good point, because a lot of people want to come on and they don't want to spend more than $19 a month. The price is down now. Some places have DSL starting at $19, or maybe $7.68 down by $128 up. Call your phone company, see if there's a DSL option. Call your cable company and see which one has the best price for you. They have different plans based on what kind of speed you want. If you're trying to cut corners by only using dial-up on a telephone, you're going to walk away from the internet very displeased. It really is not designed to work in that space. It's a very good point. I'm glad you said, when you're factoring out all the costs, the money that you're going to lay down to get into computing, it's kind of like anything else, be it a career or a hobby, it has some costs to go with it. That's something you're going to have to think about. Some people just think, well, I'll just grab internet from my neighbor for some open hotspots. Technically, it's illegal if you're using someone else's internet connection. And B, you open yourself up to getting nasty spyware or viruses from people that are using your open network. Or maybe you decide to start banking and someone can hone in and kind of capture your bank account numbers. So you really want your own dedicated connection. If you're not willing to spend that $34 to $40, $50 a month for dedicated internet, you're going to be at a real disadvantage and probably become disappointed with your computer. But I think with that, we're going to put the wraps on it for tonight. I apologize for all of the disruptions here. We'll see if we can piece together a good archive of this event. Until we meet again next week, I invite everyone to stay connected and stay directed.